Have you ever found yourself in a relationship that left you feeling empty, betrayed, or worse than before? You're not alone. Safe People by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend has become a cornerstone text in relationship psychology since its publication, selling over 2 million copies and becoming required reading in counseling programs nationwide. Oprah Winfrey once called it the book that saved my relationships, while Tim Tebow credited it with transforming how he builds his inner circle. This groundbreaking work addresses a fundamental skill many of us lack: character discernment. In a world where we're taught how to choose everything from careers to coffee, but rarely how to select the people who will shape our emotional and spiritual health, Cloud and Townsend offer a revolutionary framework for identifying who deserves our trust and who doesn't. When John met Karen in college, she seemed perfect, attractive, intelligent, and spiritually committed. Their relationship quickly became exclusive, and he believed she might be the one. But warning signs emerged: mysterious absences, ignored knocks at her door, and a troubling pattern of emotional unavailability. Reality crashed down when he caught her kissing another man. Instead of apologizing, she casually mentioned she'd been meaning to tell him about her new relationship. The emotional devastation lingered for months. This story illustrates how unsafe people operate. They may appear promising on the surface, but harbor character flaws that make genuine connection impossible. Three common categories emerge: abandoners, who start relationships but disappear when needed most; critics, who take parental roles and judge rather than connect; and irresponsibles, who avoid adult responsibilities and fail to follow through on commitments. The problem isn't our need for connection. That's God-ordained. The issue is our lack of training in discerning character. Most of us choose relationships based on superficial qualities like appearance, personality, or shared interests, rather than examining how people actually treat others. We focus on what people believe or say instead of how they behave. Unlike cartoon villains with clear identifying features, unsafe people in real life often appear winsome and charming. Their character problems may be subtle at first, but devastating over time. Abandoners destroy trust by disappearing when most needed, leaving victims feeling that no one will ever truly be there for them. Critics prioritize pointing out errors over making connections, leaving others feeling perpetually inadequate. Irresponsibles avoid taking care of themselves or others, creating chaos and requiring others to clean up their messes. These unsafe relationships don't just cause temporary pain, they fundamentally alter how we view ourselves and others, creating wounds that can last a lifetime unless we learn to identify and avoid these patterns. Unsafe people possess specific personal characteristics that make them dangerous in relationships. They typically maintain facades of perfection, becoming defensive or abandoning relationships when their image is threatened. When Donna's business partner confronted her about constantly interrupting, she ended both their friendship and partnership rather than addressing the issue. One hallmark of unsafe people is their pretense of having it all together instead of admitting weaknesses. This creates predictable negative effects. Others feel disconnected, since intimacy requires vulnerability, inferior, due to implied superiority, and weaker than they actually are. True connection requires mutual vulnerability, sharing both strengths and struggles. Religious people often fall into this category by focusing on outward appearances and theological knowledge while avoiding authentic connection. They know religious language and activities, but struggle with vulnerability about their own pain, needs, and sinfulness. In contrast, spiritual people prioritize genuine relationship with God and others over maintaining appearances. Defensiveness is another red flag. When confronted about forgetting to ship books to a conference, Jay made excuses and attacked the messenger rather than taking responsibility. Safe people respond to feedback with genuine curiosity and openness. Really? Tell me how I do that. The Bible consistently teaches that listening to feedback is wise, while rejecting it is foolish. Self-righteousness creates an I'm better than you dynamic that produces shame in others and blocks intimacy. This uneven ground fosters comparison, competition, and alienation, making genuine connection impossible. Safe people see themselves as fellow sinners and strugglers, creating level ground for authentic relationship. Many unsafe people become expert at appearing sorry, crying, making promises, showing remorse, particularly when caught, but their behavior doesn't change. True repentance comes from an internal desire to transform out of love, not from external pressure. As one wife testified about her trustworthy husband, "I cannot remember in 25 years of marriage that I have mentioned something hurtful that my husband did that he ever did again." Unsafe people resist personal growth, denying problems exist, refusing accountability, avoiding confession, sidestepping conflicts, and blaming others. They feel entitled to trust rather than earning it through consistent behavior over time. When questioned, they respond defensively. "So you don't trust me?" Safe people welcome questions and audits from loved ones, wanting to address concerns rather than demanding blind faith. Perhaps most dangerously, unsafe people lie instead of telling the truth. While everyone deceives to some degree, safe people acknowledge their lies and work to change when confronted. Unsafe people view deception as a strategic tool to manage relationships, defending rather than abandoning their lies when caught. No relationship can truly flourish when built on deception. Beyond personal traits, unsafe people demonstrate destructive patterns in how they relate to others. They avoid genuine closeness, maintaining superficial connections while preventing true intimacy. Like Wayne, who seemed pleasant but couldn't discuss deeper issues and secretly battled addiction, unsafe people maintain facades while avoiding vulnerability. If you consistently feel alone in a relationship, it signals danger. Self-centered individuals create one-sided relationships that feel like auditory masturbation. You serve as an audience for their conversation with themselves. Safe people practice empathy, genuinely entering another's world to understand their feelings and thoughts. Warning signs include people who help only to get something in return, contact you only when in trouble, or consistently position you as the giver while they take. The quickest way to identify unsafe people is to observe how they respond to your no. In healthy relationships, people respect boundaries and personal choices. When Josie declined Brian's invitation in a support group, his seemingly joking response revealed his difficulty accepting her autonomy. Her hurt reaction showed how this resistance to freedom can trigger deep emotional wounds. While unsafe people make you feel wonderful through flattery and charm, safe people risk discomfort by telling necessary truths. Crystal, a waitress who complimented everyone but couldn't directly confront when hurt, illustrates how some avoid negative interactions even when needed. Beware those who exclusively praise you and avoid telling you when your attitude or behavior is problematic. Forgiveness is the glue of love, making it possible to bear all things and endure all things. Safe people know your failings, yet love you beyond them, marking paid in full without abandoning you. Unsafe people condemn rather than forgive. They obsess over past wrongs, use your weaknesses to avoid examining their own, and desire justice over intimacy. Safe people respect your right to make adult decisions, while unsafe people resist your adult functioning. Three relationship patterns emerge: feeling like a child, where you're controlled or criticized, feeling like a parent, where the other person avoids adult responsibilities, or feeling like equals. Safe people take ownership of their lives while respecting yours. Perhaps most insidiously, unsafe people gossip instead of keeping secrets. Triangulation, when person A tells person B a secret, who then tells person C, causes deep relational wounds. Triangulators often justify their gossip with excuses like, "It just slipped out," or "It wasn't serious." In reality, they may be avoiding direct confrontation, seeking importance through inside information, or lacking empathy. God never intended for us to suffer in an unsafe world. He created a place where Adam and Eve lived in harmony with Him, each other, and themselves. Our safe relationships with others should testify to the world about God's safe love for us. Yet sin fundamentally changed relationships forever, manifesting in four areas: sin by us, sin against us, sin in the world, and Satan's strategies. Our own sinful nature isn't just about doing bad things. It's fundamentally about wanting to live without God, resenting our dependency. This sets in motion destructive dynamics that ruin safety. Envy, resenting others for having what we want, self-sufficiency, pretending we don't need others, entitlement, demanding special treatment, and transgression against God's laws, choosing self-indulgence over loving God. Beyond our own faults, other sins affect our safety. Our bonding process can be disrupted through abandonment, inconsistency, criticism, or abuse, causing us to withdraw emotionally through defensive devaluation, making love seem bad and trust unimportant. Unbonded people don't look for, recognize, or reach out to safe people. Our boundaries may be violated through aggressive control, punishment, passive control, abandonment, regressive control, guilt, or limitlessness, never hearing no. Boundaryless people panic during conflict, unable to stand firm. They often comply repeatedly with demands until suddenly abandoning relationships without warning. We may not be allowed to see ourselves as whole people, with both good and bad traits. Perfectionism, idealization, shaming, and splitting injuries create people unable to reconcile their own or others' faults. The commitment-phobic man often fears his bad self will be exposed, so he runs when vulnerability increases. Finally, our maturation into adults may be disrupted. Bruce's controlling father threatened to cut him off from family and business when he began developing independence through peer relationships. Unable to withstand this pressure, Bruce surrendered his emerging adulthood, leading to depression and continued dependency. Beyond personal sin, we face safety threats from the fallen world itself: disasters, sickness, death, career disruptions, and family breakdowns. Satan actively works to keep us from safe relationships through three primary tactics: accusing, separating us from God through guilt; tempting, enticing us to meet needs without relationship; and sifting, dividing us from one another. These formidable obstacles explain why safe relationships are so rare. The path forward involves becoming students of ourselves, identifying which areas have most damaged our ability to connect, and working to address these specific problems. When people experience a pattern of destructive relationships, the common denominator is themselves, not bad luck. As one woman told a 9-times married group member, "You haven't been married to 9 different men. You've been married to the same man with 9 different names." Our recurring relationship problems flow from our hearts, and we must look inward to break these patterns. We often choose relationships based on feelings and attraction rather than character. While the heart's unconscious wisdom has value, trouble comes when reason and emotion conflict. Our hearts can become disconnected from our values and true needs, programmed to seek relationships that match our internal dysfunction. Fear of abandonment perpetuates isolating relationships. Many who should set boundaries or temporarily end destructive relationships can't face the overwhelming feelings of loss and loneliness. Without primary safe relationships for support, they prefer unsafe connections to nothing at all. We often use hope as a defense against necessary grief. We become incredible optimists about destructive relationships, believing hurtful people will change if we just love them enough. This hope protects us from facing painful truths about someone we love, usually continuing patterns from childhood of avoiding disappointment. Like Super Saint Joe, who consistently dated morally loose women, we're drawn to people who express qualities we deny in ourselves. Since no one is completely holy, we must own our badness. Otherwise, we'll choose relationships that help maintain the illusion that negative qualities exist only outside ourselves. Susie's infatuation with Neil reveals how we choose relationships based on who we wish to become rather than genuine connection. She was attracted to his financial success and polished image, but their relationship lacked substance. Through this merger, Susie tried to compensate for her poor background by fusing her identity with Neil's strength and success. Andrea's pattern of choosing unsafe friends stemmed from her inability to confront them about hurtful behavior. This fear of confrontation is exactly what attracts hurtful people. they seek those who won't stand up to them. Without the ability to confront clearly, Andrea was essentially maintaining relationships without protective fences. Romanticizing involves idealizing someone while ignoring their faults or transforming flaws into virtues. Chris viewed her irresponsible boyfriend's scatteredness as spontaneity, his inability to hold jobs as superior intelligence, and his financial irresponsibility as spiritual detachment from material concerns. Jerry couldn't leave his 5-year destructive relationship with Mindy because he felt most connected when she needed rescuing. This pattern stemmed from Jerry's childhood with his perpetually dissatisfied mother, where he learned that closeness meant caretaking. Rescuers inevitably choose unsafe people because they need someone to save. We naturally gravitate toward familiar relationship patterns learned in our families of origin. Tammy consistently chose men who needed emotional caretaking, little boys inside, requiring someone to make them feel powerful. This mirrored her relationship with her narcissistic father, for whom she played cheerleader while never challenging his exaggerations or faults. A safe relationship accomplishes 3 vital functions. It draws us closer to God, draws us closer to others, and helps us become the real person God created us to be. These align with Scripture's greatest commandments: to love God, to love others, and to fulfill our unique purpose. Safe people accept us as we are, love us unconditionally, and help us grow into who God intended us to be. 3 qualities define safe relationships: dwelling, grace, and truth. Dwelling refers to someone's ability to genuinely connect with us, to be truly present. Many marriages suffer when one partner complains, "They just aren't with me. I can't feel them in the way that I used to." Grace is unmerited favor, someone being on our side with unconditional love and acceptance without condemnation. Relationships lacking grace require us to be different than we are to be accepted. True grace accepts us just as we are without shame or wrath. The 3rd quality is truth: honesty, authenticity, and living out God's truth. Safe relationships aren't just about grace without confrontation. We need people who will be honest about our faults without condemning us, who will restore us gently. True safe relationships allow us to speak truth to one another with less fear than would occur in condemning relationships. We need safe people for many reasons: as fuel for emotional health, comfort during difficult times, strength in setting boundaries, foundation for healthy aggression, encouragement and support, modeling of healthy behavior, emotional healing, loving confrontation, motivation toward good deeds, stability during life's storms, and learning how to love. Emotional isolation depletes us, as illustrated by Jane, whose depression and chronic fatigue stemmed from withdrawing from relationships after feeling rejected. We need connection with others as fuel, the entire body being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments grows with a growth which is from God, Colossians 2:19. Our physical well-being directly reflects our emotional and spiritual life. The remarkable case of Roseto, Pennsylvania proves this connection. Italian immigrants there developed unusually deep, multi-generational friendships and significantly outlived other Americans despite poor health habits like fatty foods, smoking, and drinking. When industrialization later broke these connections, life expectancies plummeted to national averages. Safe people literally extend our physical lives. A lack of safe people devastates your relationship with God. Your relational condition and spiritual condition intertwine like rope strands. As John writes, "If anyone says, 'I love God,' yet hates his brother, he is a liar." 1 John 4:20. If you map your spiritual journey alongside your closest relationships, you'll likely find striking parallels. When you belonged to good people, you felt you belonged to God. When people felt unsafe, so did God. To become a safe person requires practicing 6 steps repeatedly: asking for help, learning to need, working through resistances, inviting truth about yourself, entering forgiveness, and giving back. Though these steps will keep us busy for years, they produce meaningful spiritual and emotional fruit for ourselves and others. The 1st step is learning to ask for help, something many of us struggle with. Asking for help develops humility, helps us own our needs, takes initiative, develops gratitude, and increases our chances of getting what we need. We should ask not just for functional help, but for emotional connection. Telling people we need them, want to deepen our relationship, or simply need their presence. Many emotionally detached people have lost their ability to connect, with their needs buried deep inside them. To reawaken our capacity for neediness, we should confess our inability to need, avoid pretending to be needier than we feel, maintain healthy boundaries, express needs we can't yet experience emotionally, and pay attention to moments when our hunger for connection begins to emerge. We all have resistance to growth and connection. Despite how counterintuitive it seems, we often build entire lifestyles around avoiding those who would help fill us up. To overcome this, we should identify our specific resistances with feedback from friends, bring these resistances into relationship, meet the underlying needs these resistances are protecting, and do the opposite of what our resistances tell us to do. One of the most valuable things you can do with safe people is invite the truth about yourself. Two powerful questions can transform your relationships. What do I do that pushes you away from me? And what do I do that draws you toward me? When asking these questions, you communicate that you value how they feel, want them in your life, respect their observations, and trust them with your vulnerability. Safe people lead us into lives of forgiveness. They've given up the idealistic demand that anyone will be perfect, and they expect failure and disappointment as normal parts of relationships. Learn to be two-sided in forgiveness. First, receive forgiveness by apologizing, feeling empathy rather than guilt, admitting faults without excuses, asking for forgiveness, and accepting love despite your frailty. Second, give forgiveness, which frees not just the perpetrator, but yourself from bondage to hurtful memories. When we receive goodness through safe relationships, gratitude naturally leads us to give back. The giving back process involves understanding what you've gained, learning your friend's need signals, asking to help, being there by listening to their pain, telling the truth about their blind spots with humility, and going into the world to help those who have nothing to offer in return. Many people misuse the teaching about safe people to justify blaming others and leaving significant relationships. This distorts the biblical theme of reconciliation. God's example shows He moves toward difficult relationships rather than away from them. When resolving difficult relationships, we must first be secure in other supportive relationships. Like God within the Trinity, we need to operate from a position of being already loved. Debbie's story demonstrates this principle. Only when she found support in a group for enablers could she confront her husband's anger and irresponsibility. We must address our own character flaws before expecting others to change. Debbie had to face her fear of loneliness, conflict, and tendency to maintain facades before her marriage could improve. To have safe people, we must first become safe people ourselves. God uses community to transform people. Just as He used prophets like Nathan to confront David, we need others for support and intervention when one-on-one confrontations fail. Matthew 18, 15-20 outlines this process. A difficult person is more likely to listen to several people than just one. God accepts us as we are, not as He wished we would be. He gave up the ideal of perfect people, choosing instead to love us in our imperfection. This doesn't mean ignoring problems, but addressing them without condemnation or punishment. Instead of trying to change someone's basic personhood, we should appreciate their uniqueness and change ourselves into someone who can appreciate what God has created. True boundaries aren't about leaving. They're about staying in the relationship while taking stands on individual problems. This serves two purposes: developing our own character through difficult situations and giving the relationship a genuine opportunity to transform. When one person changes their responses, the entire relationship dynamic shifts. God is described as compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. He doesn't easily give up on relationships, but goes the extra mile with difficult people. We should model this trait, striving actively with others rather than withdrawing. How long is too long? Only you and God know, but it's usually longer than we think, past the point of pain, revenge, and despair. When we've done everything possible, opened ourselves to reconciliation, given time for change, and the other person remains unwilling to face their part, separation becomes legitimate. Matthew 18:17 instructs us to separate from problem people until they decide to change. Even after separating, we must remain open to genuine repentance. Remember that ending destructive relationships involves real loss and sadness that must be properly grieved. Romans 12:18 captures it perfectly. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. The good news is you can be saved from relational hell. The bad news is you must take up your cross and address your own character problems first.